You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Jean-Baptiste Maitrat. Jean is calling from Amsterdam. Jean, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thanks for having me, Brainerd.
So that sounds very romantic, a studio in Amsterdam. I imagine there's gorgeous light and it's large and very beautiful. Is that the case?
It's almost the case. My studio is not that large, but it's actually in front of one of the canals of Amsterdam, and today is actually a pretty sunny day, quite cold, but bright light. And yeah, that's the thing in Amsterdam. There's always a nice light that's not just a romantic image. It's actually really like that.
And in Amsterdam also, I want to get into your work, of course, in just a minute, but Amsterdam seems to have a great amount of support for the arts, or at least relative to the United States. Do you see it that way?
I definitely see it that way, even compared to France and compared to the city of Paris, where I'm originally from. I mean, I think one of the main attraction in the Netherlands, more than the stipend for productions or the public money that they would give for cultural productions, is the research programs that they have in Amsterdam and in other cities in the Netherlands, where they basically invite artists for almost 2 years, depending on the program, where they provide artists with a studio, a salary, an apartment, and then they really give you the space to unfold your studio practice. And that's how I came here originally, and I stayed here afterwards. But that's, I think, one of the main attraction about the Netherlands, those programs, basically.
That is very attractive. I've heard about some of those before. So that's what essentially made you take up residence or spend part of the time in Amsterdam, because you weren't a resident of Amsterdam. You were a resident of Paris, correct?
Exactly, yeah. I used to work in advertising in Paris, and at a certain point I wanted to find my own studio, basically. And it was just too expensive in Paris to dedicate the totality of my time and to an art practice and to find a studio. So I just looked around, like in Europe, where were options to maybe have a comfortable studio to work in, and I found out that it was more than comfortable in the Netherlands by applying to those programs. And I would definitely advise some younger artist who wants to start a career to look into that, because it's really also very international programs. Like, you can also find actually a lot of Americans applying there as well.
And where would those artists look? What would be the resources online?
You can
just
find
begin that kind of research.
There's actually a Dutch website in English that is called transartists.nl. But the residence program I'm talking about are, I can talk about three of them. One is called the Jan van Eyck Academy, like the painter. This one is located in the south of the Netherlands, in Maastricht. And two others are in Amsterdam. One is called the De Ateliers, so like the studios, basically. And that's theateliers.nl. And the last one, maybe the most interesting one I find, the one that I did actually, was called the Rijksacademie. So that would be R-I-J-K-S and then academy.nl, or I think .com also exists. And you have a lot of information for applications on their website. And it's in English, of course. And it's once a year, basically. The call for application is once a year.
Well, thanks for sharing that with us, because I think that is very interesting. And as I talk in this program, I'm artists all over Europe. It seems everybody has different ways of navigating. In Sweden, there's also quite a bit of support.
That's true.
A number of countries seem to really support artists. So let's talk about your work, though. At the moment, what are you working on in your studio or preparing for?
Well, I've been thinking about works that I could make for an upcoming show that will happen in Milan in a few months. So I have a little bit of time to think about what works I would want to make. And in general, I think I work on the basis of like 3 or 4 months for one project. I don't really work for longer periods than that. So for this exhibition, I've been looking at the works that I've done before, basically, and the ones that I didn't really manage to unfold as much as I wanted to. So I'm thinking of working on a set of works that all evolve around the idea of, let's say, making cinema without any traditional tools of cinema, like without any camera or a projector or things like that. So those works are, one of the works is basically a painting, and the second work would be a sculptural installation, I would say, and the last one would be a real installation with camera tracks on the floor. The painting would look like basically, I've already been developing, basically this is a pretty laborious work in terms of labor and time consuming. It's there are paintings that I'm trying to make, I'm trying to have the surface of the painting represent a certain amount of filmic time. So basically what I figured out is that I could create a painting that is structured around a grid, and this grid would be made of different sections, rectangular sections basically, that would be made at the size of a 35 millimeter film frame. So the painting would, this grid basically would symbolize somehow the film strips from 35 millimeter film rolls hanging next to each other basically, and thus this painting would contain a certain amount of film frames. So the ones I've made before and contain are maybe like the size of maybe, let's say, I don't know in inches what it does, but in terms of meters it would be around 1.80 meter by 1.20 meter large, and those paintings contain about 3,000 little rectangular sections of 3,000 film frames. And what I figured out, what was a little bit laborious, is was to scan that whole painting and transform each sections of this grid into film frames that I would then place in a film editing, in a video editing software, in order to transform the painting into a motion video. It looks very laborious when I explain it or when it, I describe it like that, but basically the idea is that the painting, when I paint on that surface, I'm painting on the on filmic time basically, and the painting is transformed. Yeah.
Well, no, I'm sorry to interrupt, but to be clear, and you can articulate this as I ask this question or as you were about to, but so as I understand it, the painting will be transformed, those frames, into a cinematic image through reshooting it with video. So you will in fact have some type of video come from that as well.
That's true, but it's just that it will not be the transfer system from the painting to the motion video or to the animation, so to say, is gone through scanning, and then I've wrote a little software that extracts each frames from that scanning and transpose it into a film editing software. So it's really a mix between, let's say, analog technologies and digital technologies somehow. And then, so there is in the end an exhibition of a painting, and next to it there is the video that is made out of this painting. So it's a little bit two ways to look at a work, one that is a still image that presents all the frames contained in one video, and on the other side you have the actual video that is projected. So when I say that I'm making cinema without the traditional apparatus of cinema, it's not completely true, but I'm trying to go towards that, so to say. And
well, it is. That does seem to tap into your ongoing research of cinema and how we're perceiving cinema without seeing that show. And I want to move on to the installation portion of that show. But right. But even with the painting and the moving images, where the viewer is understanding cinema and its potential sources from a different point of view. Correct?
Exactly, yeah. It's a point of view, and also I would even say another dimension, in the sense that you can look at a painting as not only a surface of centimeters and it's not only an area, but it can also be looked at a representation of time, and that's why I find the cinema interesting in that regard, because it really articulates somehow artificial space and artificial time together. And that work actually, this already comes from, I mean, other artists are working on this specific subject of like how to show cinema outside of its traditional representation. And I think the closest system that I found in recent art history was the work of this American artist called Paul Sharitz. I don't know if you've heard about this guy. He was a New Yorker, a structuralist filmmaker, and he used to just make films basically on 16 millimeter film, but he used to also exhibit basically the film strips as paintings, and you could look at the film and also look at the film strips, and I thought that was a great, I thought it was a very inspirational work, so I definitely took inspiration from that. I mean, originally I've tried to do the same, like using real film basically to make paintings out of it, but then it was a little bit complicated, and I think the technology today doesn't really look towards that direction anymore, so I just inverted his method by actually making paintings and that I would then transform into film.
And there's an installation portion that, I mean, I know this is kind of the way you're approaching the show and not necessarily exactly what will happen in the upcoming show as we're talking about. We're really kind of talking about methods here. But then there's
yep.
a painting, moving video images,
yep.
and then an installation. What would the installation portion entail?
Well, there are two different in works in space. I would say one that is more about sculpture and one that is really more about installation. And the one that is more sculptural, I took example of a text of art history that I found from an art historian called Philippe Alain Michaud, who is actually an art historian who's looking into traces of cinema outside of cinema, so basically what I've been working on. And he mentions a text about this museum curators from the early 1900s in a Berlin museum, I don't know which one, but he said that he found a Persian carpet with like very vibrant motifs, and that he placed that carpet behind a statue of the Virgin Mary, so to somehow try to animate that that's a statue of the Virgin Mary with the abstract pattern, the abstract Persian pattern found on that carpet. And I found that idea very exciting when it comes to trying to make cinema or to tackle the principles of cinema without the traditional tools of cinema. I'm trying to investigate that method by, for instance, creating patterns on the board of plaster that is fresh. I'm painting over the plaster and I'm creating somehow a low relief, and I'm spray painting that low relief so that the brush stroke would come visually in an explicit way and also in a strange optical game. And I'm placing a papier-mâché sculpture in front of it that tries to react to that abstract pattern that is created behind it. So it's really trying to take the same method of this museum curator of the 1900s and trying to recreate something with my own tools and my own methods, basically.
And I like that, so because that, in a sense, it's reanimating, or it's animating the sculpture or whatever is there in a different way, which also feels cinematic somehow in its approach.
Yeah, I mean, that's the idea, is to use pattern that is vibrating enough so that the viewer would have enough empathy visually with that pattern, so that whatever stands in front of this background would start to be animated. And but maybe this thing that is in front of it should also hint at the fact that there is motion engaged. So what I've done before when I tried that method was to create one object that is repeated several times and placed on top of each other. So, for instance, I worked on the form of a vase, just a simple vase that is made of papier-mâché. And I repeated that form and put it on top of each other. And the background was created with stripes, basically, a low relief of stripes that were some kind of arrows that were indicating a movement up or down. So that was resonating a little bit with the the repetition of vases placed in front of it as a sculpture. So it's a lot about playing with methods to figure out how to play with artificial space and artificial movement. And then I'm trying to inject into those methods a theme or a subject that I find somehow relevant to that method. So I haven't figured out a subject for this next show, but I'm working now on the method and the material that I want to work with.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about the show, It Ain't What You Write, It's the Way That You Write It. And of course, listeners can't hear exactly what I'm saying, but, you know, ain't is spelled A-I-N-T, and watch is W-A-T-C-H-A, and, you know, what you write is, you know, that seemed true enough just in me reading and rereading that, you know. I keep rereading a sentence to make sure I'm saying it right, and I am, but it made me that much more interested in what it is. And, of course, just that sentence alone, if you said it isn't what you write, it's the way you write it, that would mean very little to me. So I'd like you to tell me a little bit about that. I find that both humorous and makes me very curious as well.
Well, that show was a group show organized by a gallerist that I work with here in Amsterdam, and he organized that that group show at the Manifesta Foundation. It's Manifesta is an organization that creates a European biennial every 2 years. Then, but they also organize shows on the side in their own exhibition space here in Amsterdam. And this gallerist, Martin van Zonderen is his name, wanted to gather works of artists, not so much about the content of the works, but more about the singularity of the method that those artists use about when it comes to, I don't know, create something, but they're genuinely interested in it. So... So it was a pretty, there were a lot of different works, but he also didn't have any idea on what kind of title to choose. So, and I was interested at that point in strategies of writers and how I could translate that into forms. And I found that sentence, it ain't what you write, it's the way I should write it. It's from an American writer, and I'm not sure anymore if I'm who it is, but I know it's someone from the Beat Generation, probably. Who's the most famous writer?
It would be Jack Kerouac.
Right.
Jack Kerouac.
I think it's actually William Burroughs who said that. And I thought that's exactly what he was trying to put up. So I don't know if all the works that he exhibited responded to that. I chose it because I was working on that, and I thought the work that I was exhibiting was relevant to that title somehow. And the work that I was...
And what did you exhibit there? What was the work that was part of that show?
Well, I created... I showed a few works, but I created one work out of clay that was basically... the memory I had of what a Dan Flavin sculpture would look like. So it had been a really long time. I hadn't seen a Dan Flavin sculpture, but of course his work is very strong in terms of image. It renders well in images. So I had pretty strong images of his work, and in the same time it was a bit blurry. So I've tried to take a pile of clay and to try to crystallize my memory of his work into clay, basically. And so I did that pretty quickly. I exhibited that in that show, and I thought it was somehow interesting regarding this title, because it was not really my work that I was thinking about, but about the way I would show his work, like the way I would show Dan Flavin's work. And if I try to make a picture out of my memory, and if I try to make it in 3D, like in as a sculptural object, then it would look like that. So the result is a bit funny and weird, because it's not an industrial material, it's handmade. So it's also the tube lights that composes the copy of his work is full of flow in terms of form. Like you can really see the the traces of the fingers try to shape tube light, basically, and it's that simple. And so that was one of the works that I exhibited there. And the other works that I showed was also somehow, they were actually quite old works. It was a translation, again, of a news article that I had read about a Robert Gober piece that I had never seen, but the article was about how a vandal carved the word shit on one of his sculptures because he thought it looked just bad. And his sculpture, basically Robert Gober's sculpture, was a piece of, it looked like a basically an industrial wood plank leaning against the wall, and he had actually remade that wood plank with laminated wood by his hand, so it was really a strong craft labor that brought him to do that piece, that sculpture. And this visitor disagreed with the idea of exhibiting that work in this museum. And I read about that aggression towards to that sculpture, and I thought I would try to remake it. So I remade it out of plaster and silk screen, and I also included the word shit that was carved originally and now removed from the sculpture of Robert Gober when it was attacked. So, yeah, I guess the work was showing basically a state of the piece of Robert Gober that does not exist anymore since it's been cleaned. So that were the two works that I've shown at the Manifesta Foundation for this show.
I like that, and those also seem to have a kind of sense of humor as you're approaching them. Am I reading that right? That there is a kind of humor in that, which there seems to be in the show title as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a little bit about the idea that there's so much images of artwork that are circulating everywhere, and then there's not so many of them that you actually see in space. So there's a lot of work that just, you know, live in your head, and in the end, if they live in your head, even if you're not an artist, you might just actually be the creator of those works because they probably look different in reality, and you appropriate it with your own imagination. And I think I find it funny to close the circle of images by actually extracting those images that you have in mind of other works into something real.
I like that. That's really fascinating, that idea. But go on. What were you about to say?
But I was about to say that it pisses off some people, actually. Not everyone thinks it's funny. I mean, I think there's been a lot of artists these last 10 years quoting the forms of historical artists. And I think some, maybe some critic or some curator or some gallerist are a bit fed up of looking at that, and they think it's irrelevant. I mean, I had a few remarks like that from different critics that found it, that actually thought the work was interesting in terms of thought process, but that artists should stop quoting other artists, and because they didn't know exactly what those historical artists had actually done, which is something I completely disagree, because in the end, those historical artworks, like the one of Frank Stella or I don't know, the one of Dan Flavin, they've been so much digested by art historians or art critics, that it's hard to get a grip, a new gaze on those. And I think there's not really, I mean, artworks are made in a specific time period, but when you receive it at your own time period, it's also, it has an action that is only, available to you right now. So it's also valid, I think, to use it as a material that has just come. Like, it's also okay to look at Dan Flavin as if you had never seen it before, or as if you had never read anything about it before. But it's just a little bit hard to find the thought process to renew your gaze on those historical artworks. And I was interested in doing that for myself, and that's how I came to do those works.
I like that very much. And I think, you know, that's true, that it is, you know, relevant and interesting to quote other artists and historical artists, so to speak. But also the thought process you're talking about isn't just quoting other artists. We're talking about, you know, how we remember things, how we understand art, how we visually understand and remember it and transform it in our own mind, which is so interesting, and not simply about referencing history or quoting history. Before we close it, I'd like to ask, is there a show in this interview? There'll be links to your site and some of the things we discussed, but some of the listeners are from Europe, United States, all over. Is there anywhere you want to point people to, like the show in Milan? This interview will be out in November in 2015, this year. So is there anywhere you want to point people to or anything else?
Well, if we've talked about cinema and this show that I'm going to prepare, that will be in early March in Milan, and it's a new gallery that is called Rita Urso, U-R-S-O, and she's a new gallerist, but she's been running this exhibition space for 10 years in Milan, and she's turning it into a new program, and she's trying to gather artists that somehow deal with cinema in a lot of different ways. So I think she's worth checking out for people who are interested in seeing the development of a new gallery with a very specific program on cinema, and to see how it goes throughout the years. It's an interesting thing to look at, I think. So I think her website is called Rita Urso, and the name of the gallery is maybe called Artopia, A-R-T-O-P-A-A gallery. And yeah, I think that will be the place of my next show in Milan, and then I have also my website for more information on my work.
And do you and are you, so you're living primarily in Amsterdam, and your work,
yeah,
is it represented there? Do you teach there? Do you have to do other things to earn a living, or is your work in the marketplace?
It's interesting that you're asking this now. I mean, for the last 7 years, I didn't really have to have a side job to make my work. I was really, because of also those programs that I've been participating in, or those residencies. So I've managed to make a living, but I'm a bit tired of the unevenness of the income. I mean, I've been working with this gallery in Amsterdam called Martin van Zomeren. And it's a good dealer. He places the works to like interesting places and manages to sell works that are not that easy to sell sometimes. So that has been all right. But I'm looking now to new sets of programs that are emerging in Europe, in universities. I've noticed, maybe it's more common in the US, but I've noticed in universities in Europe, in the Nordic countries as well as in Belgium, they're trying to ask artists to become researchers in the universities, so that they would somehow integrate the knowledge of studio practice into scholar knowledge. And there's been, I think, a lot of debate in Europe and maybe also in the US about, is it relevant to create, like, for instance, a PhD in the arts, or does it make any sense to have like those two worlds collide? But I think there's interesting positions opening up in Europe now in different universities, and I'm trying to